Hi, I'm Thelonious Gertz.
And I'm Rhea John, and you're listening to Daily Discoveries, the weekly roundup of stories from the science section.
So today is our first episode, and we are going to kind of introducing you guys into our podcast and kind of what we're all about. So firstly, Rhea, do you want to start off talking about who you are and, you know, what you're interested in science-wise?
Sure. I'm a biophysics student at the University of Washington. I'm a sophomore right now. My interest in science, for me personally, like in my profession, would be that I'm really interested in medical physics and the application of like radiation therapy. That's something I'm really interested in pursuing in my life. And then when it comes to writing for science, I really enjoy learning about environmental science and science in medicine as well.
And have you had a chance to take any environmental classes at UW so far?
I took environmental ethics, which is kind of like a philosophy class more than like a hard science class. But it was really interesting to see all the schools of thought that have really informed kind of the policies that we take in terms of where we go in protecting environmental justice. So,
yeah, that kind of reminds me of in fall I took a biological anthropology course, and one of the huge portions of like the beginning part of the course was talking about all of the kind of history of evolutionary theories that dealt with natural selection and kind of everyone who is slightly on base and then also really off base. So like you had ideas about how people evolved and changed, and some people were like, oh, you can, you know, develop new like limbs or adaptions in your single lifetime, and then it was kind of revised to be over like a really long population lifetime rather than just like maybe the 30 or 40 years that you were alive. So learning about all that kind of stuff was really interesting to me, and I can see myself doing that later probably.
I think that's one of the best aspects of science too, is when they tie in like a larger like social and cultural aspect to it. Like when I took a class on medical anthropology that was about like medical systems in low and middle income countries. And I think that like, I think immunology, like in terms of just hard science, is really interesting, but it was so much more interesting to also see like the things that actually affect people being on the receiving end of that science improving their lives. So
yeah, that's really cool. So one of the things to clear up is I am not a scientist or a student of what you would call hard science. I'm actually a journalism major. I do a lot of social science research, and so I guess you could call that a science in some respects. I mean, I think it is, but there's some hardcore STEM majors who don't. But I principally study journalism. And so, yeah, so I guess we'll just dive into that a little bit. Part of the podcast is every week just going to be recapping the stories from the daily science section that we think are relevant or maybe need more context or need more, you know, material added to them. I also think it's a really good time to shine some light on the impact of the stories and also the writing process. So I will start it off here talking about Black Girls Who Code, which is a organization that is nationally renowned for its impact and has been going on for a few years, and they have at this point 15 national chapters, and the most recent one was opened in Seattle. And so BGC partnered with Microsoft for their Seattle location, and it has received a lot of media coverage and a lot of kind of institutional coverage as well, both from Microsoft CEO and also the CEO of Black Girls Who Code, Kimberly Bryant. And so I was really excited to write about that, you know, from a social media standpoint, from an impact standpoint, because I'm really interested in making STEM education more accessible and also making sure STEM is, you know, communicated to a wider population of people. Yeah, so that was a really cool article. And one of the things I wanted to highlight from that is that I talked to Women in Science and Engineering, WISE at UW. I don't know if you are familiar with that organization, but they had not had a lot of like contact or access with Black Girls Who Code, which I thought was interesting because a lot of the College of Engineering's mission right now and some other natural science programs is to make more like UW-centric outreach plans for students in middle school and in elementary school, even as early as that.
What did you think was like the barrier between them and connecting with the other organization?
Well, actually, I was kind of pressed for time on this, so we didn't get a lot of time to talk. But one of the things that they said was difficult is like Black Girls Who Code has only obviously a certain amount of money they can, you know, put around for their events, and their events are kind of exclusive and they're also kind of spaced out few and far between. So one of the barriers is just kind of the timing of everything. Mm. And for everybody who's in WISE, they're either like a student or a graduate student or a faculty volunteer. And so everybody was getting really busy towards the end of the quarter in spring when this launched. And so one of the difficulties was getting everybody to kind of like sync up. So I think they're going to be doing stuff in the future, but it just kind of was a perfect storm time-wise, sadly. But yeah, they're planning to do more like outreach and make sure that they can get involved. And their representative that I talked to was, you know, like, oh, we want to kind of partner with them as much as possible. And also, it's, since it's a really new venture, they haven't really had a lot of time to establish at this point. They're kind of just figuring everything out. And there was a reception earlier in March, I believe, that they kind of detailed their plan for outreach in the Seattle area, but they are still like pretty new, so they haven't had a lot to do with that. So yeah, that was the kind of main thing. This was a pretty short pitch. I was happy to cover it, and I think that it has a lot of really cool, you know, content going for it, but I'm definitely going to be keeping up on the beat of this story in the future. Mm-hmm. And making sure that we continue to cover this kind of stuff, because I think making sure that these events are available for students is really important. And also, like, there's a lot of people who know students who are, like, you know, maybe younger in the field, or like, if you work for, like, the Pipeline Project or, like, any of those other mentoring resources at UW, you have access to, you know, talk and work with students who are in, you know, middle school and high school, who I think this could also really benefit. And I think that seeing where that goes is going to be really exciting.
Is there other stuff that UW is sort of already doing to encourage or, like, promote diversity specifically in computer science?
In terms of computer science, like, I went to, I went to, like, a data science lecture earlier in the year about racism and algorithms, and one of the people working there was with the iSchool, and they were talking about how there is more, I guess, diversity and ethics in the computer science program, but they're still working out the kind of, like, kinks of that and working on getting more partnership with OMAD, the Office of Minority and Diversity Affairs. And I can't speak exactly, but I know they are, like, doing stuff. There's also, like, institutional work, like ADVANCE, which is for promoting diversity on, like, the faculty level. But as far as the undergraduate level, like, there's, like, the engineering and CSE figs, but I don't know what they're doing exactly. But yeah, no, definitely. Also, like, informatics, which is what this professor was from, they were talking about how the info department has a lot of emphasis on, like, ethics and policy and kind of, like, the impact of technology, because it deals more with data science and more of the social science aspect of technology. So they definitely have kind of a more robust foundation for that kind of stuff. Mm. So yeah, but I'm guessing CompSci will get there eventually, and they'll be working on bringing more diversity in. Yeah. So do you want to talk about your article? This one was pretty short. Like, there's not a lot to say other than, like, it's a cool venture and they have a big profitable backer.
Yeah. Well, this article was about the UW Department of Aeronautics and Astronautics working with sort of the concept of origami to look into ways to design things that reduce the amount of impact force, like, especially in aircraft, like, on legs that make contact with the ground. So by taking advantage of the way that, like, origami is, like, folded and shaped and, like, using these unit cells to absorb force, you can increase the amount of force that's absorbed by the structure, so less force has to be absorbed by, like, your larger, you're not gonna crush, like, whatever you're landing with, which I thought was really interesting, especially because origami seems more like art than, like, science, but it's really interesting to see these come together in a cool blend. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I saw this pitch and I pitched out to Sunny Wang, the author, I had kind of, like, really no exposure, or, like, I didn't know, like, any of this type of research was happening. And I kind of had, like, a misconception, like, oh, like, you know, when you make origami, it's, like, really flimsy and small. But, like, seeing the application for the aeronautical industry was just really fascinating.
Yeah. I had no idea it was so practical to kind of use it to absorb force. I'd sort of seen, I remember, like, a while ago on the internet, there was something floating around that was, like, about origami and engineering, but it was more about creating, like, very small-scale devices that then, like, unfurl into really large devices. So I was kind of thinking that that was sort of, like, a limitation to what you can do with that, and I had no idea you could use it to absorb so much force. And, yeah. Especially when they're talking about, like, passenger safety with, like, car airbags, that was, I think that's like a really interesting concern, because I know that car bugs have been sort of a, they're a safety feature, but they're also kind of a safety bug in some ways. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really interesting to see them say that, like, something very, not just as kind of abstract to most people as like a spacecraft, but something as real and everyday as your car airbag could be influenced by science developing something like this, I think is really exciting.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting to make sure like we read and know about this kind of technology, because a lot of the things they're discussing, I mean, maybe not for spacecrafts, because most people don't interact with spacecrafts mm-hmm. on a day-to-day, but yeah. like at least for car airbags and other like really relevant day-to-day technology, I think it's really important to know what that does. And also mm-hmm. it's just interesting to see the methodology behind it, because often, you know, you think of it as such a simple thing, like a car airbag, like it just pops open and then like saves you. But there actually is a lot of really relevant science behind that. And there's people that spend years and years and years just like toiling away at building the best car airbag. So mm-hmm. I think in terms of like popular science, that's definitely something that needs to be more on the you know, radar of other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it's really exciting that you know, something, the things that you sort of learn that don't really seem that attached to scientific principles necessarily, that like by employing different kinds of thinking, that there are different places where people can get ideas for really innovative things like this. I think that part is also mm-hmm. really cool. I think that a really exciting thing about concluding this article too is that the researchers were talking about how there are still, you know, problems that are unresolved, like, which is what we usually see too when we have like a cool new scientific breakthrough, is that there's a lot further to go. There's so many questions that are still waiting to be answered. And I think it's exciting that over time we're going to see, you know, incremental increases, changes as those kinds of things are ironed out. So I think this is an interesting thing to keep an eye on and follow if you're really interested in how these kinds of projects, especially this really cool specific idea with origami, makes it into industry and technology that we use on an everyday kind of level.
Yeah, and from like a purely visual standpoint, I really like the photos that we were able to get for the article too, because it shows kind of, I mean, well, I think STEM is creative, having learned more. Like, I was initially not like interested in, you know, science as much as I am now. And I kind of was like, oh, it's really, you know, like, you know, there's one solution. It's like you just kind of, you know, do it and then it's over and there's no room to like grow or whatever. But actual application of the origami is really visually striking, and I think also really visually creative to see this, because like it just fits really well. Like, I mean, it doesn't seem like you should be using origami for this, but it's a really creative way to apply that technology, and it just seems to work and really like innovates something that I at least thought was kind of, you know, over and done with, to be honest. So yeah, I really enjoyed doing this piece. We're basically just going to use this last time to talk more about what the overall vision for the science section is and what kind of things we're going to be, you know, possibly covering in the future. I definitely think covering more of like creative STEM stuff is going to be really good, because there's a lot of research going on at UW and a lot of like application and also student research that's happening that uses a lot of these, you know, kind of core STEM principles or problems, like, you know, aeronautical engineering tries to find new ways to adapt and innovate them, drawing from fields that seem to be wildly different.
That's one of the most exciting things, in my personal mm-hmm. opinion, about being at UW in general, is that, like, everybody, it seems, almost, is in their own field, even if it's not in science, is innovating something and, like, coming mm-hmm. up with something new. And especially in terms of science, I feel like writing for the science section, I feel like it was never like we ran out of things to write about, because there was always something new and exciting that people were coming up with that was worth exploring and talking about. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, and another thing that's great about UW being such a big research institution is that there's pretty much someone who's at least an expert or really good at their field who's doing some sort of research. Like in human-centered design and engineering, I was really interested in kind of like how false information spreads and how information spreads through online communities. And in the research group that I was working in the spring, there happened to be a graduate student who was doing that kind of work. And he'd worked for like the World Bank and for Facebook and for Twitter and just a variety of other companies. And like, he was someone who's kind of like on the cutting edge of like the exact research question that I had. So that is one of the benefits of having such a big population as well.
This is kind of like a tangent off of that, but like, you know what you're saying about like internet misinformation?
Yeah.
I had gone and talked to this, I was doing this piece on like the flu vaccine. They were coming up with like a patch so you don't have to go to the doctor. You can just get it inserted yourself. Mm-hmm. And I went to the Infectious Disease Research Institute and I was talking to like someone who works on designing vaccines there. And I was asking him what he thought about like all of this new internet stuff that's kind of like vaccines are dangerous and horrible. Yeah, and like I was asking him like, you know, like technically you're like, you know, like the person making the vaccines, do you vaccinate your children? What do you think of these things that these people are saying? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like they have grounding? Do you feel like you have that? And I don't know, it was really interesting to see the perspective of someone who's an expert in that field on like just the general, I think, like social turmoil that's like occurring over that topic. So
yeah. That specifically like concerning anti-vax, that's kind of a really an interesting way, like an interesting problem to look at from many angles. You can look at it from like how the false information spreads. You can look at it from like how like the information gets twisted, and then you can also like look at like the way that, you know, vaccines have been marketed to different communities. I read this article back in my junior year of high school that was like, it was called a sentimental medicine, and it was kind of a like more like historical compilation of all these reports of vaccines and other, you know, like large population antidotes, I guess, being used against, you know, different indigenous communities and different marginalized communities. And it, part of like at least those populations' fear of, you know, vaccines and like larger public health initiatives is because they've been associated with so much like generational trauma and so much kind of negative aspects to it that if there was a vaccine that maybe did do something, it was automatically like kind of branded with a really negative aspect. So I think that's a really interesting way to kind of look at vaccines and science research specifically, like looking what impact it's having in real time and also in the past, especially when trying to answer these questions of like why is something the way it is, specifically like anti-vax. But yeah, that was a good time reading that piece. But yeah, no, in terms of like the research going on at UW, I think I want to try to highlight some of the more unknown avenues as much as possible. Like obviously we have a pretty good chemistry and physics and biology and really a really good natural science program, but I think talking about more of the kind of like applied versions of those sciences and talking about more of the, you know, new research being done by grad students and undergraduates is going to be really key.
Do you think you're going to like try and get some undergraduate researchers in here to talk to them about how they got involved in that kind of stuff?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that was really cool is I believe in fall and winter, there is this student here who wrote a column called Undergraduates in Research. And every week she interviewed a new undergraduate doing something like different and or new and talked about their experience, like getting into the topic, working with faculty mentors. And I think like beyond just the kind of interest factor of like, oh, here's a young person doing this work that's like, you know, on par with like graduate level work, I think it's also really interesting to see for students who of any discipline who are interested in researching like how to get into it and just to realize like you can get into research and start producing knowledge.
I really enjoyed reading like her pieces, especially because at the time I was looking for undergraduate research, so I was really curious about like how do other kids do it and where do they find these opportunities and like what kind of qualifications do they bring to the table to make them a good fit for them. So it was really nice to see that kind of content.
Yeah, and I mean, I know for like myself getting interested in human-centered design and engineering, it's kind of really out of my wheelhouse of like journalism and sociology and even linguistics, which I am pretty interested in. Like it was kind of far out there, and so I just picked a directed research group that I was interested in and I joined, and then all this like kind of other research and other opportunity kind of just blossomed out of that, and so that was really great. And so I think I would recommend just plunging into something you may not even be interested in initially or maybe think is like too outside of it, because I also found that like being into social science was really useful to that, and I was able to contribute at least some perspective to that research group, and so that was really beneficial. So research is out there, basically. That's the moral of the story, is like do it so then we can write about it later.
Yeah, especially at UW, like there's almost too many opportunities here for there to be like a reason to not take advantage of it. Like if you really want something there's so many chances to find research because it's happening in like every discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like, we have so much more to write about. One of the downsides of summer though is like there's not a lot of undergraduates on campus who are doing their research and like working with faculty, so the fall is definitely gonna be the time to talk about that more and kind of investigate that on a deeper level. Although, like, I do know there are some people working over the summer. I have a friend who is working in like I think it's material science or chemical engineering research, so I might reach out to him and talk about that eventually. But you know, it's all out there. But yeah, covering more student research, I really want to do that. So yeah, what do you plan to write in the fall?
I really want to continue writing about AI a lot. That's something that I have so many questions about. Like, when people say AI, I always feel a little confused. Like, it's a really interesting idea, but I don't really know how it works, and I'd like to know how it works. And when I started writing that column, I was really excited because I realized there's so many people here who are experts that I can ask about it, and they're applying it in so many interesting ways. I didn't realize actually how, like, when I was thinking of AI, I was thinking like, oh, this is like a very technical, like, computer science-y thing, and it's super foreign, and the ways that they were applying it were so, like, immediate and real to people's lives, and I found that super exciting. They were approaching a lot of really challenging real-world problems and, like, pulling out a lot of good information that I think a lot of people really care about and want to know more about. So I thought that was just really cool to find out that that's what people do with AI.
Yeah, I think like it's a very subtle, like, Paul Allen CSE plug, like, really good department. But I also think, like, that's a really kind of crucial thing to bring up about science writing and also writing for the science section of the Daily in general, is like most of the people writing, like including myself as an editor, are not like deep into the one field you write about, and you do learn a lot on the job, which I think is really important. Like, sometimes I'll pick a topic and just be like, I want to know more about this, like, how can I learn more without taking a class or whatever, or doing something totally outside my major. Is like, I can write about it and I can go talk to one of those experts in that field, and I don't have to, like, you know, waste a lot of, like, time getting in touch with people. I can just be like, oh, I'm writing a story on it, and then everybody's like, oh, you immediately assume that, you know, you've, you know, got something relevant, and then you can go kind of learn that. So I think, like, learning and writing are really valuable part of this job, and I'll try to do that as much as I can personally, and also, like, making sure my, you know, writers have the opportunity to write what they want to, because I think that you know, that's just, it's a really, like, fun and, like, kind of easy part of the job, is you always get something out of an article you write. So I think also, like, covering more technology in the fall will be important. Like, I don't know whoever's listening to this, I don't know how much they're in-depthly reading and kind of looking at the, like, flow or architecture of the content in the science section, but, like, we do cover a lot of natural science and health and kind of environmental stuff, but we really don't talk about engineering enough, or, like, as much, like, hardcore tech as we could, especially being in Seattle, which, you know, is a huge tech hub and has a huge amount of people working in software development and, like, a really vibrant community. It kind of seems odd that we don't cover it more.
So, and I think it's good to familiarize that kind of stuff by, like, covering it and talking about it more, because I think, at least to me, like, a lot of that kind of tech stuff seems really far away, like, stuff I'm never going to understand or never really, like, you know, like, really get, because it seems so technical. But I think that when we cover it more, that I think it really connects it in a more relevant way to, like, people's lives and their interests, which helps them gain familiarity, which is important, because that kind of, like, hardcore tech, so to speak, like, is a very real part of our lives, and, like, it's developing into more and more a part of our lives all the time.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't know about that. I mean, rightly, because it is difficult, and it's a really, like, I hesitate to say esoteric in a way, but it's a field that, like, you really have to have a lot of kind of, like, knowledge and background to really get interested in, if you don't, like, read it in a kind of more, like, popular science publication or whatnot. So I think it also serves kind of like a very, you know, wholesome community aspect as well, and it also is just kind of like fun to learn something new about that as well.
So. I feel like that's why people like don't get into it as much too, is because they think that it's going to be like very difficult to get into, you know, in a basic way. But I think that the way it gets, like when it does get covered and written about, that it's not as hard to like really digest and understand.
Yeah, it makes it a lot better. It makes it a lot more accessible immediately if you're talking about that. And actually, that reminds me, I was talking to a professor earlier this week, and they were like, you know, a lot of people have this assumption about engineers where they're like, oh, this job is so hard. And she was like, usually that is just coming from people who are non-engineers. She's like, you know, it's a difficult job, but it's really not that hard. And there's kind of this stereotype that's being perpetuated that it's so difficult. But she was like, you know, there's kind of a way you can get into it no matter who you are. Like, there's kind of like something for everybody, you know? Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. Like, I had not considered that or thought about that, because I was just like, okay, engineering, it's like kind of out of my like little pool of stuff that I would normally do.
And with a lot of this stuff, like, you don't necessarily have to deep dive into the stuff that makes it super hard, like all the really detailed technical stuff that you need like the whole degree to understand, because there's always going to be other stuff that'll still let you connect it to what you already know in your life. So
Well, on that positive note, I want to thank you all for listening, and please tune in next week for a more structured and more article-driven episode where we'll continue talking about the latest from the Daily Science section, and we'll also continue talking about all the interesting stories to come out then. So, yeah, thank you.